Hello, everyone. This is Connie Shaw, your host for Awakening Talks with Compelling People, where we interview leading lights and emerging figures in the fields of wellness, spirituality, and selfless service. The topic of our show today is Hunger in America, and the interview title is Kathy and Howard Feldenkrais, Feeding the Homeless in Colorado Springs. Today's guest is Kathy Feldenkrais, who, with her husband, has been successfully feeding homeless people in Colorado Springs for 6 years. Kathy Feldenkrais, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Kathy, would you describe for us the location where you and your husband and your friends do feeding for the homeless in Colorado Springs, and tell us how that has changed as far as the location and the types of people you've been serving over the years?
I'm glad to. Okay, there are about 6 or 8 people in our group, and usually 4 or 5 of them show up any given week to work with us in this project. And so we pack the food at one person's house and then take it downtown. Where we go is on a street. It's actually a quiet street next to a main soup kitchen. And so there's always a lot of homeless people milling around there, or people in need. We don't know if all of them are homeless, but they're all in need of food. So that's where we go, and we do it every Saturday. We would do it more, actually, if I had my way, but we all work, you know, and so we can't do that.
I understand. What is important for the volunteers to remember, or for people that would like to start such a project? What types of qualities or characteristics are really essential in order to do this project successfully?
That's a good question. This very deeply enriching project, which it really is really for us, as though it seems like it's for the people we're serving, but we get a lot out of it. The most important things are that people regularly be there. You would be surprised how people know. I mean, here they don't have jobs, they're living, they know exactly when you're supposed to be there. If you're 15 minutes late, they'll say something. And so we want to regularly be there. And the volunteers must be very committed. That is, the volunteers have to be there at least 3/4 of the time or more. And we're there every week that we're in town, so it's usually about 48 or 50 weeks a year. And then we have the same people who regularly go to the same drop-off place so that people can find you, because some of these people don't have cars and they don't have, you know, they just kind of know that you're going to be there. And then we have a contact person that can be depended on at each of the shelters, and we go to 2 or 3 shelters if we have enough food left. And
excuse me, do you mean that you go to 2 or 3 shelters every single Saturday?
Yes, yes.
And then how do you arrange for the distribution of the food? Do you put it on tables or on the tailgate of the car, or do you put it on the sidewalk? How do you give it to the people?
Right. We give it out of the trunks of our car, and we have a special table set up that says Love All, Serve All. It has a big banner that my husband had made, and that's where we serve the drinks, the hot chocolate in the winter and the orange juice in the summer. And so that's what we do. It's a tailgate kind of thing. It's the easiest way to do it, actually.
And how many people come as the recipients? Do you have mostly men, or men, women, and children, families, single people?
Right. It's going to be about 70% men. Mm-hmm. And more recently, there are women with children. And that's kind of a sad thing, but that is the case. And then there are some pets. There always are a few dogs or cats that are kind of around the people's shoulders, you know, around their necks. It's very cute. And so anybody wishing to do this should be sure to get, have doggy treats or dog bones, or we get dog food, cat food. Yep, and that's what we do, and that really comes in handy. People are very, very appreciative. And at the feed stores, they have things sometimes that are just a week or so out of date, and they can't sell it, but it's still perfectly good food for the animals, perfectly good food, and they told us that. And so you can get that, and sometimes they just donate it to us.
What about the availability of shelters for overnight lodging in Colorado Springs. Do you think that many of these people live in shelters? How many shelters are there?
There are about maybe three or four shelters. The largest one is the Salvation Army shelter. They do a very good job, but they don't let people in, obviously, who are drunk or look like they're on drugs or something like that. So some people are literally on the streets. I don't know exactly what the homeless population is in Colorado Springs right now. There's a big article that just, a five-part article that's just coming out in the Colorado Springs paper all about the homeless. And it's called Blind in Plain Sight or something like that. And so there are a lot of people, and they do have places to go, especially in the winter when it is cold. But they do have to leave always in the morning and stay out until 6 or 7 at night when they're let back in. And so sometimes it's very cold. They go to the library sometimes. The library doesn't appreciate that a lot, but
it's warm. What is your climate like in Colorado Springs for our listeners who might be in another state or overseas?
Right. We do have four distinct seasons in Colorado, and sometimes it can be brutally cold in the winter and very hot in the summer. And so that we're looking at a couple months, like January, February, maybe a little into March when it's really cold, and then in the summer when it's hot. And in both of those are uncomfortable people, but obviously the winter time is harder on people.
Yes, of course, and they would need hot food as well as cold food. Can you tell us what your menus are like? What types of food do you prepare at home, and how do you supplement that? So what would they be receiving on a typical Saturday, say, in the wintertime?
Right. Okay, so we serve about 150 people each Saturday, and it is next to a soup kitchen. Now, so some people eat the food right away. Others will stash it for tomorrow or the next day. And the lunches are, we have two kinds of lunches, hot rice and vegetables made by an Indian lady. It's very, very good, I can tell you. And then if people don't want the hot rice, then they get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that is made with a good whole grain bread and things like that. Everyone gets juice, fresh fruit, usually bananas, since some people don't have teeth, and it's just, you know, they're very nutritious, and it's easier for them to chew. And then some kind of snack crackers. And then if you get the rice, the first thing I mentioned, the Indian rice, they usually give out some kind of chips with that. People like that. And that's it. It's a full meal. And then we also have, we hand those out from the trunk of our cars, and then we also have hot chocolate or orange juice, depending on the season.
It sounds as if you provide wonderful, wonderful meals and treats for the homeless there. Now, I understand that your husband, Howard, has purchased a commercial popcorn maker and that you also give out boxes of popcorn each week to the homeless. Can you tell us a bit about
yes.
how that happened?
Yes, Howard calls himself Colonel Howard. It's K-E-R-N-A-L. We make about 108 bags of popcorn every week. We usually do that on Friday at our business, and we hope that the phone isn't ringing on that time, but it's usually fairly quiet by Friday afternoon. And we use organic popcorn, which we get from a co-op here in near where we live, and the organic clarified butter and Celtic sea salt. The people love it. More than loving it, having a great taste, it gives them nutrients, the proper fats that they need and salt that they need, both summer and winter, a lot of these people. And so it's very, very digestible and very good. People love the popcorn. They take... most people take more than one bag, but we do kind of look the other way. We say it's fine.
Oh, that just sounds delightful. Now, I understand, too, that once a month you supplement the food with other items that are in the area of clothing. Can you tell us about that, Kathy?
Yes. My husband goes to the Army-Navy store, and he gets combination of socks. We do socks sometimes every 2 weeks, but at least once a month. And people like having clean nice socks, and it makes them feel good. And it also, we get light socks in the summer and heavier socks. They have these good terry line socks that really keep people's feet warm in the wintertime, and gloves, hats, and we do the gloves and hats through the fall and winter, and we have little sun visors and things like that for the summer, but we do underwear and undershirts, you know, like that for in different small, medium, mostly large and extra large. We do those about once a month, and so we get those at a Target or something.
This reminds me to ask you, Kathy, have you applied for a 501c3? Are you a nonprofit? Where do you get the funds for your generosity to the homeless people there?
Everybody pitches in. There are many, many channels to get money for the homeless, but we're very fortunate. We have a group of 10 or 12 people that are very generous, and so we haven't had a problem with that so far.
That's outstanding. Also, I wanted to ask you, in regard to doing homeless feedings on the street or in a local parking lot as you're doing them, what about security? How do you dress, and what do you do with your possessions?
Mm-hmm.
Like your purses and wallets and things like that.
That's a very important point. We dress simply. By that, no glitzy jewelry or anything like that, which may seem like an obvious thing, but we don't realize how we look. A middle-class person looks to someone who's homeless. They look like a good target. We
yes.
leave our... besides dressing simply, we lock up any wallets, expensive sunglasses, anything like that, in the glove compartment of the car. We have never had a problem of anyone stealing anything. We don't want to break that that very, very good, you know, stream of good events. So we don't have, so we do lock everything up.
Well, that reminds me to ask you this. Have you ever had a situation where you gave certain objects, gifts, to the people, and it didn't work out that well? Are there any aspects that you have changed because that part of the project just was not that successful? Although your project is enormously successful and a tremendous mm-hmm. model, we always learn from the things that don't go so well. Could you share some of those?
Exactly. People will ask generally for money.
Oh.
We are discouraged from giving money. We do give once in a while if we really know the people. We give them little gift cards, like to Walmart or Target, something like that. If they're, say they've gotten a job, which some people do. Some people have matriculated out of the homeless and they have jobs. They need construction shoes with steel toes, something like that. So we do that. Now, in answer to your question, there is a chance that people will turn around and sell what we give them. We don't have control over that, and so we just give out judiciously. That's where the other homeless people, if you want to call them people on the streets, come in, because they know their community, and we have them. There's a few men that are always there every week, and they help us giving out things like socks and everything, and they know if someone has taken the same thing the week before or something like that, or if they've taken too many pairs of socks and it looks like they're going to sell them or something like that. So that's how we handle that. You do have to be judicious. Coming back to that on a related point, is that we don't get into deep conversations with any of the people. Most have lived on the streets for quite a while. And part of the survival mechanism is to tell what I call tall stories. So we just keep it light and friendly, no dramas. And that's how we get around that.
So people need to be aware that they must not become drawn into the personal details of the people's lives, because they're not equipped to really respond to those. And if they know their boundaries and they're friendly and cheerful and respectful of the people, then they won't run into any difficulties.
Right, exactly. It's to be friendly and non-judgmental. These people are looked down upon when they walk down the street if someone knows they're homeless. There's a real stigma to it. So to treat the people with great respect and friendliness. They love a friendly. My husband's very, very friendly, and he's always joking with them. And I mean, that's what they really, really like. And so I would say to keep it on that level and not to be involved in their dramas, because everybody has a drama that's on the street.
I like what you said about utilizing the awareness and savviness of some of the homeless people themselves to help distribute some of the non-food items. And I'm wondering, has there ever been a case where one of, or two or others of the people have become rehabilitated into society and then have come back to help with the Feeding Project or help in some other service project that you know of?
Well,
or has anyone gotten a job besides the person that went into construction? Was there anyone else in the group that was able to get a job and then break the cycle of homelessness and hunger?
Yes, they have. And one person got a job at a local college in the kitchen there, and a really nice guy. And he came back to tell us that he wasn't on the streets anymore, that he was... they gave him a room at the college, and he worked in the kitchen, and I don't know if he can take classes there or not, but they were very, very good to him. It was a part of their outreach program. So yeah, people do come back. As of this point, we haven't had anybody who wanted to help. A lot of people say, I'm going to get a job and come back and do what you do. Well, we have not seen that yet. Usually people want to forget that phase of their life.
Of course, it is often painful, and they want to move forward in their lives and more or less try to make up for lost time and gain new ground and become established. Well, how has your involvement changed you as a person, Kathy, in the past 6 years?
I really identify with a lot of the people, and that surprises me because my life is very middle class, hardworking, I have a business, you know, like that. But I see how we're all brothers and sisters, as they say, and we're all the same, and everybody's looking for the same things in life. So that has been a shocking realization to me. And what surprises me most and continues to impress me is a lot of these people, as I had told you, that if they put a business suit on, you wouldn't really know they were homeless. People say please, they say thank you, they act like I would hope in my greatest dreams that I would act if I was in this situation.
Yes, in other words, this could happen to any of us at any time,
yep.
And there's no way that we could stereotype homeless people. They are just simply people who are currently without a home or without an adequate home.
That is the best way to think of it, because a lot of people do come from middle-class backgrounds, and we're in a, you know, with the country the way it is right now, it happens to a lot of people, or women with children. You know, it's like, my goodness, there but by the grace of God, you know, go any of us.
Yes. You had mentioned to me, Kathy, earlier that a few of the homeless people that you serve, your recipients, had very touchingly given you gifts. Would you be able to tell us those stories?
Yes. The people are—they're very kind to us. I mean, because we've been coming they sort of depend on us. They feel, and they know that we aren't judging them, and we aren't talking down to them.
Yes.
And so they feel really comfortable with us. And one lady gave me a little vase with these like fabric flowers in it, these little white tulips, and so I put them in a guest room. She said, I just want to thank you for everything that you've done. It was so sweet. And then there was a guy who was, he's a very talented, I guess in the South they'd call him a whittler, or we would call him in the North a sculptor. He makes these little bears with little baby bears on top, and he gave us one, and he actually gave one to each of the people that help at the project, and he's very, very talented.
Oh,
I said, this could be in a store somewhere. He said, well, I'm hoping someday. And so they've given us little gifts and a thank you. It's their way of giving back, which is really, really nice. Very touching.
Oh, absolutely. Kathy, what do you see as trends from your perspective with the project as far as homeless in the nation and homeless and needy in Colorado Springs?
Well, the first thing that we notice is that there are more people in the last 6 years than there were before, and they seem to be more organized. That is, they look out for each other's campsites or each other's cars. It's like a little sub-society that has grown out of necessity.
Really, it's like a community within the community.
It is, and it's something that not a lot of people are privy to, but we kind of have seen it from, there are the same laws or rules of taking care, like they take care of women first, they make sure the dogs and the cats are fed and things like that. So there's sort of a substratum that is invisible, but it is there in our society, and it's definitely among the Colorado Springs that are the people that we serve in the Springs.
Well, speaking of a substratum, I understand that Colorado Springs is known for being the home of the very beautiful U.S. Air Force Academy, that there are many military people there. There is at least one Army base, and there are a lot of veterans. Can you tell us about the vet population? Do you see many veterans from various wars that are on the streets?
There are some. People tell us they're veterans. Some people show us their cards and everything, but I'm not really familiar with that, and so I go, oh, okay. But there are many people that tell us that they are veterans and that they serve this and that, and we have no way of really checking that. And so we just go, okay. But on Veterans Day, as well as regular holidays like Christmas and Easter, we do bring special treats, special cookies that are wrapped and everything, and people really do appreciate that, and especially the veterans. If these people are indeed veterans, which they say they are, and they are, you know, some of them still have their fatigue coats and everything, and they appreciate that someone is appreciating them. And there are a lot, I'm sure, a lot of veterans in Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of appreciation, I found it very interesting and delightful that you said you do mark the various holidays, mm-hmm. such as Christmas, Valentine's Day, Easter, with extra cookies or treats or things like that. You had mentioned to me earlier that you frequent a particular bakery in Colorado Springs, and the person there does special things for you. Can you tell us about that? For example, when you order a large number of cookies and how she organizes them and wraps them and so on.
Well, it is a national company. It isn't a Colorado Springs company, and so they just give me a little extra when I call this place, and they know what we're doing. And so they give us specials and things like that, which is really, really nice. And everything is wrapped very well so that we know it's very sanitary. But it isn't in the Springs. I wish it were, but they're sent from another location.
So you have to do a lot of organization and preparation to ensure that you have the ingredients for the preparation of your meals and the beverages and the containers and the popcorn. And it's not just a matter of hastily putting something together and driving over to the two or three different centers, but you actually have to very methodically shop, organize, and chop and cook and prepare and pack and load and unpack and distribute. So there's a great deal involved with every step of the process.
Yes, there is. And we're very lucky to have a lady that does the rice and buys the ingredients for the lunches, the lunch bags, things like napkins and little spoons for the rice, all these little things. And she has a list, and she does all that. She does a very, very good job. On that point, in any food project, if anyone is listening or they want to start it, give food only you would eat yourself.
Say more about that.
No stale or throwaway food. The people, unfortunately, they've probably been through dumpsters and things like that, you know, and we want them to respect them as human brothers and sisters, and so you don't going to give them anything that you wouldn't eat yourself. And so the people, it's part of treating the people with respect when you give them good, high-quality food. What you're saying is you deserve that, which is why, I mean, there's nothing really, the rice is very good, but there's nothing really gourmet about what we are giving them. But it is clean, vital food, and we do buy organic when we can. And so it makes them feel very, very respected. People should, because the food goes right into their body. And so it is good to respect them in that way.
Absolutely. Now, you had said that many of the people don't have teeth. I suppose that after a long time of living on the street, when people don't have any sort of access to good, free dental care or health care, and they're eating a food that is intermittent or substandard, or they have other challenges and difficulties in their lives, that is going to begin to show in their teeth and their bones and their overall health. So, do you know if there are any groups that provide dental care or free medical checkups or medical camps or anything like that on a regular basis, since Colorado Springs has so many military installations there, and I understand is the headquarters for 250 Christian organizations and churches in the country. Or would you say that this is a field of opportunity waiting to be addressed to help the homeless with dental care and health care and more feeding projects?
Yeah, this part of it, because there is a small percentage of people who drink a lot and have drug addiction problems, that affects teeth quite directly. And there is that fear of dentists that runs through all of society, I think. And so, but they do have clinics that, I've not been to those clinics, but I kind of know where they are. People say that they're going to the clinic on Monday or something like that. So there is some kind of a medical and dental safety net in the city for them, and so that people do know how to leave themselves of that. They know to go there, and they know the hours, and they've told us that. And so it's really just a lot of people have a tremendous fear. Like one time we were trying to put something together to inspire the people, and we wanted to take some pictures, and people did not want their picture taken. So we said, okay, that will never happen again. They are maybe running away from the law or something, or feel that their picture might land in a paper, and there's a lot of shame with that.
And oh, yes, of course.
There's a tremendous amount of shame of not being able to, you know, to live on the streets. And so So that's what goes on with people. But they do find some medical help. In fact, there's a fellow, a very nice guy, who needed two hip replacements. He was kind of on crutches and couldn't walk very well. And he kept saying, I'm going to get a hip replacement. And we thought, you know, another story. But one hip has been replaced, and the other is going to be done in February. And so he said that there were funds and there were channels available to take care of them. So I guess that they do, you know, they are available.
Oh, that's very moving and very heartening. Kathy, we are out of time. I'd like to ask if within the next 30 seconds you have a final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners.
Yes. Start wherever you are. That if you can just make 10 or 15 lunches, take those out. People would appreciate it very much. And you don't want to get involved in the dramas, but you just want to give people some nourishing, good food, and you want to give them a smile, and sometimes just that respect that they're valuable is the most important thing.
Kathy, you're a very inspiring person, and I hope that our listeners feel galvanized to decide to do something in their area along these lines. I'm so grateful to you for being on the show, Kathy.
Well, thank you for having this show to inspire many people to do this. It's the greatest gift and the greatest disguise. You just wouldn't believe it, but it is. And so I hope everybody goes out there and helps even one family. It would be very, very good.
That concludes our show tonight. You've been listening to Awakening Talks with Compelling People. I'm Connie Shaw, and our guest was Kathy Feldenkrais of Colorado Springs, Colorado. Thanks for being with us. Visit our website at connieshaw.com. That's CONNIESHAW.com, and listen next time. Remember, you can make a huge difference by sharing your love, talent, and experience to alleviate human suffering. Please commit to joining or creating a selfless service project in your community today.